Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast. I'm Dan Abern, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined today by Jeff Shannon. Jeff, we're now 1 week removed from the opening of the contact period between college coaches and student athletes in the class of 2019 on September 1st. And despite all the anticipation and buildup, there was no apocalypse. It did not happen. But there's been some action. And we're going to delve into that today, along with a preview of our recruiting issue, which is available digitally this weekend. So this podcast is launching on Friday. I believe we will have revealed who our number one recruit is by now. We may delve into that later in the podcast. Let's get to it. September 1st, like we said, apocalypse did not happen, but there was a lot of stuff that did happen, you know, on phone calls, on emails. What were your observations of that day?
I think everything that I kind of gleaned from that day, I thought our publisher, Terry Foy, did a good job of relaying in a story on InsideLacrosse.com. I hope everybody got a chance to kind of read it and see what the initial reactions were. He sent out a text to a big group of Division I coaches, the ones who are going to be most affected by the September 1st, the new recruiting changes in the September 1st deadline. And it's interesting how the responses ran the gamut, as they say. You had coaches who slept like babies that night, apparently. You had coaches who started conversations that night with the intent to know that this was just a first, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Just wanted to know that we were thinking of you. With the intent on following that through in more regular times. And then it sounds like other guys really kind of kicked off real in-depth conversations with the recruits starting that night. It was interesting to read the responses. You had responses that Terry got back from everything from, yeah, I slept great, to one coach saying, not really. I just texted the guys I really liked last night that I would love to catch up today whenever is convenient. And honestly, I don't think the 2019 class is very good. So we are reaching out to 4 or 5 uncommitted kids only. So that's kind of the middle of the road guy. I kind of reached out, but it's not really jumping into it. Another response: we didn't do the 1201 thing, but seems like a lot of folks did. This morning has been complete circus, though. Can't imagine what next year is going to be like. Half these kids are in school too. Nuts. So it's interesting, just kind of the group of people that kind of gave a response to this. So this was another good one, too. Not really had scheduled emails to go out at 12 a.m. Pacific time to about 100 recruits. I mean, that's a big cannon that you're working with on that one. Saw about 10, 15 kids open them that late, all West Coast kids. No calls or texts to anyone until this morning. I thought Terry did a good job kind of gauging that first run of things, responses and reaches out. So again, from what I see, this was not the run. This was not lacrosse's college football signing day. You weren't seeing 18 million kids put on hats, flip hats, go with what's happening on that day like you do on the college football signing day. It was more, here's the first step of a process that was going to stretch in September, October, and November. Really, I got to think until, the high school season, and maybe even beyond that. You know, coaches may want to say, hey, we want to see how you play a little bit in the high school season. Are you going to get a varsity spot? Will you be seeing significant starting minutes for your team? It's interesting. I kind of thought it would go this way. And then I think in years to come, you'll see a little bit more a sense of, you know, this date, the September 1st date, being a true, you know, verbal commitment signing day, college football signing day for guys. But we'll see a bevy of verbal commitments from your top 10, your top 15, 20, 30 guys. And then the process will continue to play out kind of how I think it was. So I think in the future we'll split the difference. This time it definitely was save for a few things, kind of quiet. Your perspective, Dan, I know you were really kind of anticipating this deadline and kind of what the results would be like. What did you see out of it?
It's funny. I think a lot of people went into September 1st with like this perception that as soon as 1201 hits, college coaches are calling kids with full ride offers and there'll be like a flood of commitments at midnight. It pretty much went anything but that. There was some action, but I think what we saw on that first day was actually just a lot of college coaches, I know for most of the major programs, kind of reaching out to the guys who had already verbally committed but were barred from talking to because of the new rules, and kind of getting on the same page with them, talking to them, saying, hey, are you still with us? If not, we need to know, and we need to move forward from that perspective. And then I think there was also a lot of hard conversations happened. We know that there were a few drops, you know, I think in the ACC particular, you know, coaches had to make that tough phone call and open up their own options. But I think a lot of what we saw was just kind of recontact, maybe scheduling some visits for a lot of players. Kind of made, there was a few commitments. I know the first few commitments that we had came from California, two guys who committed to Brown. Just really, I think there was about, Terry said 10 to 15 he anticipated committing within the first week. I think we've actually seen less than 10, so it's even gone slower than his perception.
Yeah, I wanted to go over a couple of those names. Terry had reported in his article there were at least 4 verbal commitments made publicly on that first day. You mentioned the two kids. I believe these are the two guys from Brown, committed to Brown, Oscar Hertz and Porter Holland, both West Coast guys, you mentioned.
Yes.
Jack Griffin to Loyola. And then Tommy Barnes to Princeton, and Evan Anstead to Cleveland State, and Graham Blake to Syracuse. So, you know, a group of guys were kind of in that first run to get commitments. Terry also reported there was some unconfirmed news, but some interesting, you know, rumor mill stuff that two ACC programs were rumored to have dropped 2 players each. A Big Ten faceoff commit is rumored to have switched his commitment to an ACC program, and a Patriot League MIDI informed his coach of his decommitment, dropping the coach to book an unscheduled home visit. That's an interesting aspect of this, and I heard a little bit of this from some of the
unprompted home visits.
Some of the hot recruits of the summertime a little bit. Some guys who maybe were verbally committed to one school, you know, getting attention from other schools, requiring coaches to take cross-country flights impromptu to go, hey, you know, I really committed to you. It's an interesting aspect of lacrosse that I don't think you know, you didn't have to do that before. In the old generation, it's interesting comparing 10 years ago or 12 years ago, it all adds up after a while, to even now. Sort of you had the last generations of veteran coaches who kind of came up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s who were still out there. They would, you know, they would target the 5 or 6 best guys from Long Island and Maryland or upstate New York on the July, I think it was a July 1st deadline to talk, to actually be able to verbally talk to seniors. They walk up to the guys and be like, hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? Get those guys and be good to go as a program. They trusted the high school coaches that fed them these kids. They trusted the programs that they came out of in terms of knowing the game, having the IQ to play Division I, having the athleticism to play Division I. Today, it is so much more mirrored quasi-football, basketball in terms of recruiting. These guys are out there. They're doing the legwork. They're making the phone calls, making the texts. And now, really, and I think a big part of the future of where we are recruiting is going to be a really building out a big fall in terms of getting guys on campus, being able to talk to guys on campus when they're eligible, making those visits sing on a certain level, and then being forced to also take this time of year to go to kids' homes and show up and say, hey, I really like you. I love you to be a part of our program. That's something that, you know, you see a lot of football. You see a lot of times football programs have dudes that literally that's, you know, their coaches in name. I mean, they'll help, you know, set up the receivers or whatever, but their job is to go recruit. It's interesting that Division I coaches will – That's kind of in their future. You saw some of it before, but like the power was in their hands. This is a little interesting. This is that they have to go out and sell themselves. It's a next step in terms of the footballization, the basketballization of the sport in terms of the infrastructure and recruiting.
Yeah, to comment on something that we mentioned earlier, the coaches really did have their own approach, and it varied by staff. Like I know one coach that I reached out to on September 1st, or actually I reached out to him before September 1st saying, what was your game plan? He's like, if you think we're calling at midnight, we don't plan to do that. I'm going to wake up and basically send kids a text, see when is a convenient time to talk. But that varied. I know one coach who said, I'm going to make all my calls and texts at midnight. I'll be done within the hour. And then I'm going to stay up till 3 for the West Coast kids. So it really did, like you mentioned, run the gamut. The responses were very different. It's very interesting because the 2019 class, Terry has mentioned this before, but a lot of those spots are filled, so there isn't as much activity. But 2020s will ramp up the intensity. 2021s it might be a free-for-all.
That'll be interesting to see, because in my anticipation, when I look at the future, this is what I see. Most of these guys know they have their classes mostly filled. A guy here, a guy there drops, a guy here commits. You know, you're going to have some wiggle room on the edges. But I don't see a lot of wholesale changes. A lot of it's just recommitments, re-establishing of relationships and those type of things. 2021 will be interesting. You won't have very much any verbal contact, if at all, over 2 to 3 year period for those guys. So it will require the coaches to really build their scout book on who they like. Like it's a little different than what they've been able to do. They'll have to really get out there. So I think those tournaments don't dissipate in value in terms of those kids getting out there and showcasing themselves a little bit. They'll be able to learn the game. They'll be able to do little different things. But I still think coach is going to be like, I need to have 2 years worth of research on these guys. So when it comes September 1st, I have my 100 kids that I have to sit down. And I think that date, you know, 2 years, September 1st, 2 years from now, I guess 2019, will be really interesting in terms of what the strategy is now versus is then. Because, again, it's everybody, it's the dance card is open on both sides. And the coaches will have to introduce themselves to probably a wider swath of kids than they do now. And the kids will have to be able, you know, who are the coaches I want to listen to.
Jeff, let's take a quick break to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron is affordable. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Blue Apron is also flexible. Customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options so you can choose what fits your needs. And there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Blue Apron is also guaranteed. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. Some featured upcoming meals include creamy shrimp rolls with quick pickles and sweet potato wedges, and chili butter steaks with Parmesan potatoes and spinach. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lacrosse. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
It's interesting. I think some people thought it would be big. Now, I am intrigued also in the future, if we're going to start seeing the het game like we see in the college football. The problem is it's verbals. It's not analyzed. And a lot of times with the het game in college football, it's signing day itself. They have to sign a paper right then and there. So you put 4 outs in the contracts signed. By the time your NLI is signing lacrosse, the decision's been made for a year plus. It's more of a, because 90% of the kids aren't getting full ride scholarships, it's more, well, I got some books here, I'll sign my paper, I'll take a photo for my parents and for my school, and that's about it. But maybe. I don't know. I'm intrigued to see what some of those hot top recruits in a year or two decide to do when it comes to verbal commitments, or where we'll go in that future or not. Again, the thing is, lacrosse, with money-wise, it's just not, you know, the money's not there like it is in other sports, so the value of being showy is a little different than it is in other sports.
Yeah, I think the intensity of announcing your commitment has ramped up. I think in the past couple of years, it used to be, you know, you kind of just, your club coach would call Ty Zanders and be like, hey, he's committed here. That was really it. Now, you know, it's all about Twitter. Kids want to announce their verbal commitments. And even some kids are getting the graphics. I really love the graphics. Like, it'll be a picture of him, like, playing. And then it'll be the school's logo to the right or something like that. And, like, or maybe even, like, some kids will get the advanced one where they're actually, like, photoshopped in the uniform.
I do. I like that. I'll be intrigued. It does make it newsworthy. I think that's one of the things that I do selfishly as someone who works in editorial company likes about this change is that in the future, when I first started, a verbal commitment was news. Steele Stanwyck's verbal commitment was a huge story for us. When he was a junior, the fall of his junior year, one of the earliest recruits at the time, he had made his verbal commitment to Virginia. Big news when Nikki. Oh my God, this kills me. The North Carolina to Syracuse kid, Nikki Galassa. Yeah. I don't know what took me a second. Nikki was a phenom since eighth grade when he made his commitment. That was big news. In the last few years, an eighth grader makes a commitment. He's an eighth grader. And it gets buried on Twitter someplace. It's like outside of that first guy who kind of breaks the glass for the class, you get this volume of 30, 40 little kids, basically, who, have a modicum of lacrosse talent, but you have no sense of what their athleticism is, really, in terms of a true athlete, no sense of, their mentality as a person, as a player at that age. It gets lost in the shuffle. I kind of like, as selfishly as an editorial person, we'll have some stars again that will be making commitments September 1st of their junior year or that fall. It becomes news again, and I like that.
Yeah, those recruits that you would refer to, the newsworthiness of their commitment is newsworthy because of how early it happened. It's not like, oh my gosh, like we got this player going to our program. It's like, man, can you believe that our coach, got this kid to verbally commit 5 years before he's going to end up on campus? So I'm absolutely in line with you on that one. I think it definitely returns the newsworthiness. And that's why I'm actually really excited about the 2021 result, because I really feel like, I think that's when we might actually get the kind of like bombshell kind of commitments that you see with football. And I think especially in basketball where, are now airing their commitments on ESPN. Like, wow.
That fall will be important. It'll be interesting. It'll be a good news beat to follow, which is, okay, these kids are going to this campus this fall. Are we going to expect verbals coming out of that visit? Another weekend, big football game at this top state university. 30 kids are on that campus. Do we expect any commitments to come out of those things? I don't think we'll see, some visits. The visits will be a big part of this year and those things, but that's when it's going to be. These kids now have the power in their hand that fall, their junior year, 2021, that when they make a visit to campus, it's news. And if they make a commitment out of that weekend, it's news. I like it. I like it a lot. It's fun to kind of get a sense of how these classes are building, and the newsworthiness of everything kind of ratchets it up to where we were, just this shotgun of verbal commitments from eighth graders and ninth graders. When you had no feet in the fire, you're like, oh, well, he seems to have a nice stick, but he's 5'2" because he's 13 years old, 12 and 13 years old. Now it's like 16-year-olds, men, people that can that you can really quantify making decisions. It's fun. It'll take us back to a time when this was important, and I like that.
Jeff, let's delve into our recruiting issue, which, as we mentioned, goes on sale digitally this weekend.
Yeah, let's. We're going to do a quick preview of this. So over the next month, I expect our team to kind of get into the nitty gritty of the breakdowns of this issue, and it's always a fun issue to get into. Fall ball's here. A lot of these guys in the class of 2017 are on campus. We're expecting to see them already out there on the field. And then we have the young guns who'll be, playing football in high school or doing the recruiting circuit again in November. So there'll be a lot to kind of talk about and then parlay into where we can see them and what we're doing. But first things first, the digital issue with all the information will come out this weekend. Make sure to get your copy of it. I think it's worthwhile. The photographs, the information that you'll find only in the magazine versus online is there. The listings, your first real glance of what the class of 2017, 2018, 2019, and even 2020 includes. And I thought our team did an excellent job. Spearheaded by Dan, this is, I guess, your second year, would you say? Second, third, somewhere around there?
Maybe yeah, like second year, I would say.
Really spearheading.
Completely in charge of a lot of things.
Especially a lot of our young guns. coverage for this issue and getting a sense of everything. But I think one of the big news, the big news out of our first posting of this and your ability to buy a copy of this is our cover story, which is our number one overall recruit. Shouldn't be shocking anybody who kind of has followed him in the last few years, and including the his hop play in the Under Armour game, is Tohoka Nanticoke, attackman out of IMG Academy in Florida, originally from the Six Nations, Ontario. Great player, a man amongst boys, I guess is the easiest way to kind of give him kind of set him up in terms of where we're expecting him to play. And just one of the top stars in the high school game, prep game, and indoor game over the last few years, now brings his game to the NCAA. And I'm really excited to showcase his cover, get his story out there. Matt Kinnear, our editor-in-chief, wrote the piece about him. Definitely worth a read. But Tohoka, his story is awesome. His game is awesome. Dan, what do you think of this selection here?
Really like it. I think Tohoka has a really rare combination of size and skill. And one thing that Matt Kinnear delves into in his story is that the Native American connection will obviously draw comparisons to Lyle and Miles Thompson. But in reality, the comparison that is most apt is one to John Grant Jr. because of the creativity and also the size and the style of the physical style that is incorporated into Tohoka's game. I really felt like the Under Armour game was something that really sold us on him as being the number one recruit. And if we look at the potential of him being a four-year starter, you know, Lyle Thompson had two straight years, you know, with an unbelievable goal-scoring output, point-scoring output, and then Connor Fields this past season, I believe, had the third most successful point-scoring season in history behind Lyle. So we kind of envision him being this prolific Albany scorer that has kind of fit the narrative of, you know, the past couple seasons of NCAA lacrosse.
Yeah, Tohoka from, I've seen him play several times now, IMG Academy, with the Iroquois Nationals during the U19 tournament up in Canada last year, and then at the Under Armour game. And then online via his box game as well. His physicality is the first thing that you notice. His size, just a wall of a man.
I was actually just kind of blown away by how big he was when we met him in person at our recruiting issue photo shoot. I was like, wow, like I'm a pretty big guy. I'm 6 foot, almost 200 pounds, and he made me feel tiny.
I think in another world, he would be one of those guys that would have been bred to be offensive guard in football. Oh, as one of those interior type.
Maybe even like an elite rugby player.
Correct, yeah. So that type of physicality. But then you match that with the stick skills that are so quick and so elusive. I think those are the big things that you'll notice. I can't imagine him playing behind a lot. He's a topside type guy. But anywhere from, you know, GLE left to GLE right, he can score. And really, in an elusive way, you think the ball is to the left and it's coming up underneath your feet. And again, 100% reminds me of John Grant Jr. in his prime, his ability to scare you with his size, and then the ball rolls underneath your feet and you go, how the heck did that happen? Really looking forward to him within the context of Albany's offense and just as an NCAA recruit over the next couple of years. Tohoka, hard not to go with him in this class. Again, Matt Kinnear, his story will be online with about Tohoka, and then the rest of that class on the attack side and offensive side are listed in the Inside Lacrosse 2017 recruiting issue. Couple other number ones we want to mention. I think they'll be part of some of the lists that we'll be going over. These are not surprises by any means, but definitely some interesting information that we'll get out there and really analyze over the next few weeks. But our number one midfielder, no surprise, Matt Moore out of Garnet Valley, headed to Virginia. I wrote the story on that. His coach in high school, kind of known at this point, was Frank Urso.
Who?
Arguably, not arguably, the greatest midfielder of all-time, I would say. Pure midfielder of all time.
Four-time All-American.
Four-time All-American. Two-time McLaughlin Award winner. Was his mentor in high school.
Quite the coach.
And when he praises you to the heavens, that says something to me. I think he'll be an interesting piece of the Virginia offense moving forward. If you look at his high school stats, he was more the midfield quarterback than he was the prolific scorer. Guy could put up points, and he definitely has a lot of goals in his career, but they really relied on him to set the offense up for that team. I could see his assists being higher than his goals early in his career, running, say, the third spot on a first midfield, or maybe quarterbacking the second midfield. Just to give you know, when you got Doc Saikin and Ryan Conrad on the midfield, I don't know if you want to put a Matt Moore on there and really overflood that offense and lose some virility on the second midfield when you just slot him down, let him QB that second midfield, maybe a couple time room shooters on either side of him, let him set up the offense there. So some interesting pieces where he can kind of start his career there.
Yeah, talk about quite the midfield. Docs, Ryan Conrad, and Matt Moore.
It's the number one midfielder. And they all deserve it. There's very few guys that I get. Like, I think out of those classes, Docs, it was hard to think of anybody else but him. Conrad, sort of the same. I think Matt maybe has a little competition in terms of two or three other guys that could probably have vied for that number one spot. But I think in the end, Matt's longevity, his consistency, and his ability to contribute on his NCAA team all kind of like kept him at that number one spot.
Yeah, and I feel like with what we saw from Lars and his Virginia team last year, with the there was no hesitation to get freshmen right in there, so I really do think that he's going to see meaningful minutes right away in some sort of fashion.
Yeah, again, I don't know if to me, I'm not quite sure he's out there running with the first midfield from day one, but I think his skills, not to say that he'll be on the field in some capacity. I like an idea of him being the key component of a second midfielder earlier in his career. But we'll see. We'll see how the fall plays out. I'm looking forward to getting out to some of these fields and watching practice and watching games. Another number one on our defensive end, Isle's favorite, Arden Cohen, from Darien, Connecticut, part of a defense that led Darien to a co-number one ranking in the Under Armour Inside Lacrosse High School top 25 this year, really locked down their opponents through the season. Arden, smart kid on the field, works well in the defense, and I think his skill set and his abilities will shine with a Notre Dame defense that could use a little punch, kind of get back to where they were a couple of years ago, and I think he could be a key piece of that.
Yeah, I know some people have called him Jerry Burns' prized recruit because he really does kind of fit perfectly into what they build their defense around. You know, not necessarily the biggest guy, but or the most athletic guy, but just such a smart player who will always make the right play.
On the attack side, also featured in the magazine is Bubba Fairman, someone who, again, story we've told a couple times over in his career. Fascinating tale of someone who came from the West and is now ready to take over the East at the University of Maryland. Part of a offensive unit that's going to be really interesting to watch in the fall and the preseason in terms of who gets the starting spots where, who fills in those pieces for arguably the most important attack that Maryland has seen in its history with Matt Rambo and Colin Heacock and those guys. Now that they're gone, what's the next step for those guys?
Yeah, I think Bubba definitely should be competing for time. I know one thing that Coach Timlin is really high on him about is the fact that he could play two positions. He could end up playing midfield, but I do see his future at attack for the Terps.
Yeah, and we've seen a little bit of that with Bernhard, who started his career at midfield, but we expect him to be an attackman this year. Bubba, again, depending on where they need pieces or where the flow is. And we saw a little bit of that, I think, in the Under Armour game in terms of his athleticism, someone that can actually run upfield and run downfield just to get out there and be a part of the offense. So it'll be interesting to watch. Face off, number one, Justin Inacio. That's no surprise. Justin is, too bad he was hurt in the summertime. Didn't really get to see him shine at the Under Armour game, but his career has just been magnificent. Led at the Hill Academy to a number one UAIL ranking in the 2016 high school season. Kept them as a top five team, top 10 team in this season, and just someone I'm looking forward to see at Ohio State with a really good faceoff, potentially really good faceoff unit with him. And Christian Feliciani, who will get his start, his chance to shine also this year after working behind Jake Withers last year. Christian was a U19 player, and I think he really gets some time. And then our number one goalie, also headed to Virginia, Alex Rode, key piece of the puzzle down there as well. So a lot of number ones. Looking forward to really getting into the issue the next month, really. I mean, I can't imagine we'll be talking about anything else until then.
Absolutely. Well, that's really our show for today. We appreciate everybody listening. Go buy the Inside Lacrosse digital issue of the Recruiting Issue.
Dan, you are out for the next month. I hear you're doing a tour of the continent.
Continent? The European continent, that is. Yeah, I'll be out. I'll be on vacation. Check my Twitter. I may.
Any lacrosse on this vacation? Or
I actually am. I'm going to my club team buddies who I played with when I studied abroad in England have a they need a ringer for their game in their first game in September, so I'm going to go, I think, play with them, bring in just my my head because I don't want to mess around with bringing the stick on the plane, so I'm going to pack my head in. They're going to hook me up with a shaft once I get there, and hopefully I go off. 8 goals, baby.
Nice. I like it. In the meantime, the editorial staff here will be doing the Recruiting Issue fallout, and looking forward to October and November.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.